ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पादं शंकरं लोकशंकरं शंकरं शंकराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वंदे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेदि मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः गुकारस्त्वन्धकारो वै रुकारस्तन्निवर्तकः अन्धकारनिरोधित्वात् गुरुरित्यभिधीयते सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवत् गीते भवद्वेषिणीम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तन्न विदुःसु देवाय तस्मै नमः रिसाइट दी फर्स्ट वर्स पेज नंबर 9 श्री भगवान उवाच ऊर्ध्वमूलमधःशाखम् अश्वत्थं प्राहुरव्ययम् छन्दांसि यस्य पर्णानि यस्तं वेद स वेदवित् As you said last night, in this verse, Lord Krishna described the samsara, the universe, and that is compared to a tree. In particular, it's called Ashwatha tree, which is well known as people tree. The derivative meaning the word ashvatha. In Sanskrit, swaha means tomorrow. Staha means that which will be, which is. Shvattaha, that which will be tomorrow. Ashvattaha, that which will not be tomorrow. Which means that the universe being what it is, that which will not be tomorrow means it is perishable. It is constantly changing. It is perishable. That is the nature of the names and forms of the universe. Beginning from a small subatomic particle, all the way to galaxies, whatever it is, all of these is created. And a time will come, maybe a long time, when it will perish. And even when it is there, it is constantly changing. That's important. The reason why this is pointed out is that what is changing cannot be real, cannot be reality. As we said last night, reality is called satyam, truth, and that must be necessarily unchanging. So Lord Krishna is pointing out that the world of names and forms and variety and diversity that we confront, we come across, we experience, is perishable and constantly changing even as we see it is changing. And therefore, it is not real. But at the same time, an unreal thing cannot exist without something real. It's very interesting that whatever we come across is a union of the real and the unreal. In Vedanta, unreal is called mithya, real is called satyam. Whatever it is a combination of mithya and satyam. What it is that what we perceive, what we experience is changing is mithya. But then, what manifests through that changing appearance is satyam. Meaning that it is satyam, or the truth, or reality, which is manifest with the costume that is mithya or unreal. So, what we confront is a union of two, the satyam and mithya, real and unreal. Like an actor, which is maybe playing the role of a beggar. What you see is a beggar. But understand that the beggar is not real. Beggar is an appearance. What is real is the actor which is manifesting through that costume. What appears outward is a beggar. And therefore, we would think that this entity is a beggar. Not knowing what the reality is. And we may treat that person also as a beggar when the play is over. And then his true nature is revealed. So say, you are giving me a dime, I can a dime a dozen like you I can employ. The reality is much greater than what appears to be. What appears to be is a beggar. What is really is a very wealthy multimillionaire. Urdhvamulam adashakam, as in this beggar, mulam, the cause, the reality is much greater. And what appears, that is something very lower, inferior in terms of reality. And therefore Vedanta says that what we experience through the senses is not the ultimate reality, is only an appearance, is only a costume. And a costume cannot be without the actor. And therefore, this changing world of names and forms, which is what we experience, cannot be without the changeless reality, changeless substratum. And therefore, Lord Krishna begins Urdhva Moolam. Understand that Moolam, the root, the cause of this apparent universe, Urdhvam, is above, Utkrishtam, is exalted, is limitless. The reality of the truth is unconditional. Truth does not depend upon time. It is the same at all the times. Does not depend upon place. It is the same at all the places. Does not depend upon condition. It is the same in all the conditions. Meaning that the truth is not limited by the boundaries of time and space and condition. What we come across, what we experience is all conditioned by time, because whatever we experience had a beginning and will have an end. That's called conditioning or limitation by time. What we experience exists in one place at a time and not at another place, meaning that it is limited in place. And whatever we experience possesses some character, some attributes, but not other attributes. This is a clock and not a table, the table and not a chair, etc. So whatever we experience is conditioned by time, place and attributes, understand? Meaning whatever we experience is all limited. And we think that that is the reality of life, meaning that our life is based on taking what we perceive to be the reality. And we are trying to extract some happiness and success, etc., out of what is apparent to us, what we experience. Unfortunately, the experience of human being is that you cannot get any kind of reliable, lasting happiness or success from this world, regardless of what you achieve. And achievements such as wealth and fame and power, etc., does give us a certain satisfaction, no doubt about that. But then its capacity to give satisfaction runs out. It is called the law of diminishing utility. After $1 million, when I get, I'm excited, I'm ecstatic. Then I get used to that. Then my mind says, what next? Another million? A third million? I have lots of money. Then what next? Then I must have some fame and name. Then what next? I must have power. The idea is that this what next never ends. And what next means that what is not sufficient for me to be satisfied. I need something more or something other than what I have. That is the question, what next means. So even though in our life we do have moments of satisfaction, no doubt about that. But the greater amount of time is in what next, always trying to achieve something different from what there is, something greater than what there is, something better than what there is, in the hope that I will arrive at it, a situation where I'll be completely happy or satisfied. Lord Krishna says, no, adashakam, this is inferior, this is an appearance, this is unreal, this is mithya. What is unreal or changing or temporary cannot give you permanent satisfaction. This impermanent thing cannot give you permanent satisfaction. But the next question is, can we be satisfied with impermanent satisfaction? Answer is no. We cannot be satisfied with impermanent satisfaction. We want permanent satisfaction.
A lasting satisfaction, lasting happiness is what we want. So Vedanta Urdhvamoolam, you have to recognize your desire for permanent satisfaction is a genuine desire. But the way you are trying to satisfy that desire is not right. And therefore, other things are said here, ashvattham, prahu, avyayam, chandam, siyasya paranani, of this tree of samsara, Vedas are the leaves, yastam veda sa veda ved, one knows this tree with the root. The knowledge of the tree will be complete only when we know the root. The knowledge of the costume will be complete only when we know the actor. Knowledge of the effect will be complete only when we know the cause of the root. So one who knows the universe along with its cause, merely knowing the costume is not complete knowledge. Merely knowing this apparent names and forms is not complete knowledge. Only when you know the root, the cause, the reality, then alone the knowledge is complete. But just as the tree cannot stand without the root, and the tree points out the root, and so also the universe does point out the root, some cause, some basis. And so really if we examine our experiences, then this universe does serve a very nice purpose. And that is to reveal that there is something beyond that. So let us read the next verse.
Narupamasyeha tathopalabhyate. Nanto na chadir na cha sampratishtha. Ashvatthamenam suvirudhamulam asanga shastrena drudhena chitva So when we pay attention to what it is that we are experiencing with an objective mind, Lord Krishna described the tree as Na rūpamasyeha tathopalabhyate. If you look at the translation on the page 10, it says, its form is not perceived in that way. Nānto na chādir na cha sampratiṣṭhā. Its antaha means end, ādi means beginning, pratiṣṭhā means the middle. Hey, you cannot determine what it is you cannot determine. That's what Vedanta says. You cannot really determine what it is that you are experiencing. What the nature of world is, you cannot determine. Of course, the physicists tell us that they cannot determine. Because more you probe into the matter, and further into the subatomic world, and you find that it is more and more complex and more undefinable, to the extent that whether it is a particle, whether it is wave or a particle, all of, you know, it's with this mass or momentum is something indefinable. It's most amazing how the scientific investigation tells us that this is mithya, because you cannot arrive at or you cannot determine anything to be such and such. What is the standpoint at the most? That from a given standpoint this is mass, or given standpoint it is momentum, given standpoint it is wave, given standpoint it is particle, etc. But absolutely you cannot determine, because it doesn't have a reality, therefore.
Since what appears doesn't have a reality of its own, that is the reason why you can never really determine what it is. In our life also, we cannot pinpoint anything as such and such, that this is right, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad. There is no such thing as absolutely right or absolutely wrong, absolutely good, absolutely bad. Everything is a combination of both these contradictory features. See, right cannot be where the wrong is, and wrong cannot be where the right is, but a given thing will appear right from one standpoint, wrong from another standpoint. Good cannot be where the bad is, bad cannot be where the good is, but then a given thing will appear good from one standpoint, bad from other standpoint. It's a matter of paying attention. This is when those who wish to determine what is it, what's the reality of the universe, what is it? Is rupa, is form, cannot be really be determined to be such and such. This is called mithya. See, Vedanta has revealed all this from the time beginningless. And one thing about Vedanta is that is one thing that is not threatened by science. What we find is, all along, science is merely validating what Vedanta has revealed all along. The tools with which Vedanta arrives at its conclusion are different from the tools with which the science arrives at the conclusion. Even science also arrives at its conclusion only by reasoning. Scientists in Vedantic language, we call Nayayikas, they are all logicians. Science arrives at all its conclusion by inference. You perceive something and from there you infer. That's the reason why there cannot be anything ultimate as far as the science is concerned, because all that is required is for somebody to come with a superior argument, then, you know, what it is will change. It's very interesting. The point is that can you expect, by possessing this world, by owning this world, is it possible for us to really achieve what we are seeking in our life? First of all, it is also important to understand that we are seeking something in our life, that our mind comes up with desires one after the other that shows that I want something in life. The fact that a desire is fulfilled and leads to another desire means that I have not yet achieved what it is that I am seeking, because other than there will be no desire. So that we are seeking something in life. And what we are seeking, as we said earlier, is we are seeking lasting happiness, lasting satisfaction, not something temporary or fleeting satisfaction. The reason why we do not find ourselves satisfied with anything, we do not discover a lasting satisfaction of anything, is because nothing that we achieve is capable of giving us lasting satisfaction. At the same time, we cannot give up our desire for lasting satisfaction because we are born with that desire. There are two kinds of desires in our life. One are what we call the natural desires, and other can be called cultivated desires. Hunger is a natural desire. And therefore the need for food for appeasing hunger is a natural need. But gourmet food, that may be cultivated desire. That we need something to appease our thirst, quench the thirst, is a natural desire. That I want a particular kind of soft drink, that may be a cultivated desire. There may or may not be a provision for fulfilling cultivated desire. In the creation, the scheme of things, there may or may not be a provision for fulfilling my cultivated desires. But there always is a provision for fulfilling my natural desires. Ishvara has created this universe and made sure that every creature gets what it needs. From birth to death, whatever is needed is provided for. Meaning that there is provision to satisfy our natural desires. They say that when teeth are given, then the food also is given. Now the question is, this desire for my lasting satisfaction, desire for limitless happiness, is it a natural desire or is it a cultivated desire? Am I born with the desire or someday I thought, let me have limitless happiness? Is it a willful desire? Answer is no. It is not that someday I decided that I want the limitless happiness. I find myself desiring that. If I analyze my desire, which most of us do not do, most of the time human being keeps on fulfilling desires as they arise in the mind, thinking that fulfilling desire is success. But someday somebody would want to ask, how come in spite of satisfying countless desires, the desire per se does not go, meaning desire which is the manifestation of my inner need, that does not seem to satisfy? What do I want? What do I need? Then we find out that the desire behind all the desires is for that limitless satisfaction, limitless happiness. And that's the reason why nothing limited can give me any kind of sustained satisfaction. Now, whatever we experience, all limited, all changing, all perishable. Can a changing, limited, perishable thing ever give us? The limitless cannot give us. So that is when we start asking fundamental questions as to how to satisfy that desire. Is there anything limitless? Only limitless can satisfy my desire for the limitlessness. A limited thing cannot be. Is there limitless? So this verse said that when we really analyze what we are experiencing, analyze the nature of all our achievements, we find that all of these are really limited. And therefore, it becomes then, once we have this kind of an insight that yes, what I am searching for is limitless, then I have to, now then the whole direction of the life changes. If this happens, until then a person keeps on living the what we call the routine life of struggles and conflicts and stresses and disappointments and conflicts. Because like the tenth man, As long as he's searching for the tenth man where he is not going to find him. He has to look where the tenth man really is. And similarly also, if you are searching for this success, limitless, etc., where it is not in all the limited things, we cannot expect this limited achievements to give us the limitless that we are seeking. That insight has to come. And that may be the result of lots of virtuous punya karmas we have performed in the past. It's like what we call the grace of Ishvara. That we recognize or somehow get this kind of an insight. Or we come across somebody who draws our attention, who points out to us. That's the reason why whenever we go to Vedanta classes, the first thing that a Vedanta teacher does is to bring this to our attention as to what I am seeking. To understand that we are seeking, the desire shows that I am seeking something. And the fact that all these, in spite of fulfilling so many desires, the desires are not satisfied, means that I am seeking something which is not limited. But whatever I come across is all limited. So where is what I am seeking? Where is it? So this is there, then I need help. Vedanta says that you should go to a teacher. Meaning that you have to gain this teaching from a qualified teacher. Just as the tenth man can never discover that what is searching for his own self, somebody has to bring his to your attention that what you are searching for is yourself. And so also somebody has to bring it to my attention that what you are searching is to be discovered from yourself and not outside of yourself. So this is the role of the teacher comes. That then, when this is clear, then I should go to a teacher. What does the teacher do? Helps me to contemplate upon the reality which fortunately happens to my own self. The most beautiful thing is that satyam or the reality which is changeless is not someplace else which is where people are generally searching for. The tenth man is searching for tenth man somewhere. It's not there. It is his own self. Similarly also, this reality that we are searching for is to be discovered from our own self. And that has to happen with the help of a teacher. Therefore, coming to the context of the Bhagavad Gita, or the Vedic context, those days going to the teacher meant that you have to wind up everything here, you know. You have to retire, wind up everything. Leave everything here and then go to the teacher with no baggage in the mind. What is the baggage? My attachment. See, one thing is, when I am pursuing knowledge and listening to teacher, what is needed is a mind that is with the teaching. A mind that is free from distractions. A mind that is free from conflicts and distractions. Is it not so? For any learning, let alone Vedanta, even if you go to study in a school and colleges and where, we require a mind which can we can focus. And fortunately, as far as studying the objective sciences is concerned, there is not much difficulty in focusing the mind. Because studying physics or chemistry or medicine or any objective science, if I'm interested in that, I'm able to focus my mind. At that time, my personal anxieties, worries, stresses do not seem to become an obstacle. But here, the subject matter is myself. What Vedanta teaches us is the true nature of my own self, which is the most difficult thing. Isn't it amazing? But studying this particle, all these very complicated things is not as difficult. Not emotionally as difficult. Intellectually it may be tough, but emotionally not as difficult as. So the problem in studying Vedanta is more emotional problem than intellectual problem. Intellectual, of course, is required. What's the emotional problem? When I go to study physics, I go with a clean slate. When the physics professor teaches me some principles of physics, my slate is clean, I have no axe to grind, I have no opinion about it, and therefore I am very objective to what the person is teaching and I am able to grasp it. It may be atoms and molecules, whatever it is that they are teaching. Because I have no opinion about atom, I have no preconceived notions, I don't have any agenda at all with reference to the physical sciences. You see what I am saying? Meaning that I don't have any preconceived notion as to how a particle should be or how an electron should be. What it is fine with me. But when it comes to the self, I already have all kinds of preconceived notions about myself. And there are a lot of emotional stuff about my own self, and this is what becomes an obstacle. Meaning that I'm not as objective about myself as I am with reference to the objective sciences. So meaning that for studying or learning something, what I require is an objective mind. What is an objective mind? A mind that doesn't have any preconceived notion, which doesn't have prejudices, which doesn't have any agenda. Open mind. Whereas I am open about everything in the world, I am not open about myself because I have lots of notions and conclusions about myself. Because we are self-conscious beings, never always conscious of ourselves. Other creatures also are to some extent self-conscious, but their self-consciousness is not evolved enough for them to have any emotional problems. So dogs and cats and donkeys and monkeys don't have any emotional problem in terms of they don't have any sadness and don't have any depression, etc. They don't have any kind of conflict. They don't have preconceived notions. They don't have anger and they don't have greed and they don't have lust. They don't have that. Because they are programmed. Don't come and argue with me, Swamiji, they are not, even if they are not, this is an example I am giving. Suppose, the people always, the whole lecture, this is what they will listen, and then they will have all kinds. Who says Swamiji? The dogs and the, even if they are, I have no problem with that. What I am saying is, this given as an example of a comparison, that's all. Swamiji, no, our dog is a very emotional dog. I said, yeah, how many years has he lived with you, you know. So yes, it will become. Meaning we are quite capable of making our dogs and cats also like us and they also become sad. So there are dogs, therapists and all psychiatrists, all kinds of things are there. So that's what is new creation. But in India, we have lots of street dogs. They don't have any problem at all. They might bark at you and perhaps get angry momentarily, then they forget it. It is just an observation. We are not making any comment about it, nor do we desire to be like that. That's also not the point. But our self-conscious, most evolved self-consciousness, and therefore we are intimately conscious of ourselves and we have an opinion of ourselves. There is, in our Pujya Swamiji's words, a self-judgment or self-opinion as to who I am. I always have a notion about who I am so and so. We cannot but have an opinion about ourselves, because it is the nature of our mind to judge. And we judge whatever it is that we come in contact with. And the first entity that we come in contact with, our own self, the first thing that is there is judgment about myself. Who am I? By who am I mean, you know what I mean is whether I'm good or bad, I'm right or wrong. That's what I mean by self-judgment. Not that I'm, you know, I'm 5 feet tall, etc. That's okay. But this kind of judgment, I'm a limited being. I'm not as good as somebody else. I'm better than somebody else. Our mind compares ourselves, and again that adds to the complexes that somebody is, in my opinion, more handsome than I am, and that's another complex. Somebody is not as, and that's another complex. I'm taller than somebody, shorter than somebody else, more fair, less fair, etc. All kinds of complexes we have about ourselves. And based on that, we also have then judgment about the world also. And that is how each one of us interacts with the world in its own, his or her own way. So this thing, that is the reason why I am not objective about myself. What is necessary is for me to be objective about myself, meaning essentially become free from all these complexes that I have within myself. Yesterday we gave an example of a simply sitting Swami. Somebody says, Swami, suppose I be a simply sit, will it be all right? I said, please do. Try to simply sit and you'll find out. That mind has so many problems with itself. Basically because I am not comfortable with myself. I cannot be with something or somebody with whom I am not comfortable. And I am the one with whom I am not comfortable. Therefore, I cannot be simply sitting with myself comfortably. So the qualification for studying Vedanta is developing a comfort with oneself. Then only I can be objective about myself. If I want to study what myself is, I should be objective, meaning create a distance. I should see my own thoughts and emotions without getting involved with them, and then I'll be able to learn and understand what my true nature is. So this verse says, Ashwatthamenam suvirudhamulam. This tree of samsara has, its roots are well entrenched. The roots are well entrenched, meaning that these emotions in terms of the complexes about the self. And when I am not very comfortable with myself, there is a need to be comfortable. Therefore, whoever gives me comfort then becomes somebody whom I like or somebody whom I want. And those who give me discomfort are those whom I do not want. Therefore, the need for self-comfort brings about these likes and dislikes. If you say, Swamiji, you are so nice, then I like you because you make me happy. You make me comfortable with myself. And on the other hand, you say, Swamiji, you know, what is this, what you say is not right. I don't think that you are able to express yourself, something like some critical thing. Then I become upset. I don't like that person. Basically, I like the comfortable self and I dislike the uncomfortable self. That is my basic like and dislike. And therefore, those people and situations which create in me a self-comfort also become likable, and those who create in me a self-discomfort become disliked by me. Therefore, we like some people. We like to be with some people. And we avoid other people. We like some places, avoid other places. Like some situations, avoid other situations. If we analyze why that is so, we'll discover that those people, those places, those situations which create in us self-comfort, we like them. Because basically, we like the comfortable self. And therefore, whoever or whatever is means of that comfortable self also becomes an object of like. And I'm not happy with an uncomfortable self. Therefore, whoever creates uncomfortableness in me, I don't like that one also. So, that is our relations, our likes and dislikes, attachments and aversions. So, those emotional problems. We have two problems, intellectual problems and emotional problems. Vedanta can solve the intellectual problem. But emotional problem we have to deal with first of all. Vedanta helps there also. But the point is, what is emotional problem? Emotional problem manifests in the form of these likes and dislikes, attachments and aversions. So since my need for a comfortable self is so strong that whoever creates a self-comfort becomes very important to me, and therefore I cannot do without that. So there are things and beings without which I cannot do. That's called attachment. And similarly, there are things and beings which I cannot stand, and there that is called aversion. So attachments and aversions. And since we have never realized that these attachments and aversions are damaging to me, we have not done anything about them, and therefore these fellows, attachment and aversions, have been becoming stronger and stronger. Because all I am doing is trying to fulfill my likes and dislikes. I do what I like to do and avoid what I do not like to do. I want to achieve what I like to do, I want to get rid of what I do not like to do. That is my life. And more I satisfy likes and dislikes, stronger they become, like pouring butter into fire. This likes and dislikes become stronger and stronger, and ever more and more controlling me. I do not have the freedom. It is my mind is controlled by these fellows, likes and dislikes. Attachment and aversion, they control. And therefore, it is important that I should make myself free from this hold or sway of likes and dislikes or attachments and aversions. So this verse said, Ashvatthamenam suirudamulam, these secondary roots of likes and dislikes have been deeply rooted. Asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. It says that cutting this with the weapon of detachment. Weapon of detachment. That is why Lord Krishna described this creation, the world. It does not deserve, it is not right for you to have likes and dislikes because it's all unreal. What you are attached to also is unreal, and what you have aversion for also is unreal. Analyze what you are attached to and what you have aversion for. They are all unreal. So when we recognize the unreality of those things, for this attachment, this example I have given you, in the New York City, this man saw a beautiful woman and immediately was attracted towards her. And she started following her. And soon she realized that this man is following me. So she changed she took a right turn where she was walking, and this fellow also took a turn. She went this, and he just followed wherever she went. She entered a cafeteria, and then he also entered, and she took a place on a table, and he also took place on the same table. She ordered coffee, he also ordered the coffee. I mean, he was pretty strongly, I guess, attached, whatever. It's amazing. So she was a very kind person. He said, looks like that you really like me, isn't it? He said, yes, I've never seen more beautiful. I said, you know what people say, never seen as beautiful person as you, and this and that, and look at your face, look at your hair, look at this. That woman says, my hair is very beautiful, isn't it? He says, yes. She pulled out the hair. It was a wig. My teeth are beautiful. He says, yes, that was a denture. My face is beautiful. There was all kinds of foundation, all stuff on that. It turned out to be really a woman with lots of, wrinkles. An old woman, not good looking at all. So when we really look into what it is that we are attached with, this is what we'll find. And then we have aversion for other things. They are also superficial. Our attachments are for the superficial also. Aversion also is for the superficial. For that we give the example of a sandalwood, piece of sandalwood, which is fragrant by nature. But that sandalwood, if it is left in water for a few days, then its outer surface gets rotted and it started stinking. Sandalwood is stinking. So we now don't like that. You throw it away. However, the one who knows that this sandalwood knows that the stink is only superficial. When he rubs that piece of sandalwood with stone, when the outer surface is rubbed off, and then its inherent fragrance becomes evident. So also things that we hate also are like this. That is also superficial. So when we really analyze the nature of things, we'll find that there is no real basis for either attachment or aversion. So we have to address this raga and dvesha, attachments and aversions. If we do not pay attention, if we keep on fulfilling them, they become stronger and stronger. And they bind us. So real bondage is nothing but the bondage of, or at least the first level of bondage is this raga and dvesha. We are controlled by them. We are controlled by our impulses. Therefore, we have to attain this moksha or liberation in two stages. First level of freedom that we achieve is the freedom from these raga dveshas, attachments or aversions. Or what in Bhagavad Gita also is called kama and krodha. This craving, kama is cravings. Krodha means anger. Lobha means greed. We have to attain first level of freedom from them. And for that, Bhagavad Gita, of course, teaches what we call Karma Yoga, and we have discussed it in the past, with right attitudes and values. All with analyzing, analysis. I'm attached to somebody or something. What's the reality of that? I hate somebody. What do I hate? I will find that what I hate also is costume, and what I'm attached to also is costume. The reality is that which is not subject to either attachment or aversion. Asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. Thus, by analyzing the reality of this tree of samsara, which is in fact nothing but mithya or unreal. So, what we actually experience is a costume which is unreal. And then our attachments are also for the costume. Aversions also are for the costume. When we realize that the costume is immaterial, it is costume, not a reality. This beggar I hate and the king I love, but then both of them are costumes. Beggar also is a costume put on by the actor, and king also is a costume put on by the actor. And therefore, if I really realize actor, there will be no attachment, no aversion, is it not so? So here Lord Krishna in this verse says, Asanga, this is called the weapon of detachment, weapon of viveka or discrimination or analysis. That when I analyze the reality of what I am attached to, and I realize what I have aversion to, I realize that both of these are unreal, superficial. Like this man fascinated by the woman, superficial. Like we hate that piece of wood sting, superficial. So first step is making our mind free from this sway or compulsions of attachments and aversions, raga and dvesha. I cannot do without something, that is called bondage. I cannot stand something, that is also bondage. Because they don't have any real basis, therefore. I cannot live without somebody because that is a source of my happiness and security, Swamiji. There is no happiness, no security anywhere other than yourself. The true happiness and true security is to be really discovered from your own self, because that is the only source of happiness and security, nothing else. Everything is itself insecure. In the whole universe, everything itself is insecure. How can it give you security? Everything is constantly changing, imperishable, and how can it give you something permanent? So thus, when we analyze what it is that we want and the nature of the universe, then we realize that there is no point in having attachment and aversion, because both of these are born by not understanding the nature of what I am attached to or what I have aversion for. Therefore, Lord Krishna presented the universe as a tree. In Sanskrit, the tree is called vruksha. This is what I'm sure everybody knows. Vruksha means tree. Vrashanat vruksha. So that which can be felled. So the tree is that which can be felled. By what? By the weapon. Which weapon? Of detachment. Asanga shastrena drudhena chitva. Becoming free from these attachments and aversions by the weapon of detachment, weapon of vairagya, weapon of dispassion arising from a true understanding of what I am attached to. I should analyze, what am I attached to? What do I hate? What's the reality of what I hate and what's the reality of what I love? Then mind will become free from both of them. With that free mind now, what should we do? Read the next verse. Tatah padan tat parimargitavyam. yasmin gatana nivartanti bhuyah tameva chadyam purusham prapadye yatah pravruttih prasruta purani. Tatah, thereafter, tat padam parimargitavyam. One is to properly inquire into that padam, that end, that goal. Yasmin gataha nanivartanti bhuyah, going where they do not return. What is meant is, see here our experience is, wherever we go, we have to return. Whatever we achieve, ultimately we find it to be unsatisfactory and we need something else. So Lord Krishna says, that is the goal which reaching which nothing more remains to be reached, attaining which nothing remains to be attained. Meaning that which will give you what you are seeking, that which will give you permanent or lasting satisfaction, lasting happiness, attaining which nothing remains to be attained. And really speaking, there is no attainment also. It is like the attainment of the tenth man, which we told you in the story last night. The search for the tenth man arose because the person did not know that I am the tenth man, I am the one who I am searching for. Similarly, the search for that lasting satisfaction, that ultimate, the real success in life, the real happiness in life that we are searching for, we will discover that, or that Vedanta teaches that it is our own nature. We don't have to go anywhere, we don't have to do anything, we don't have to achieve anything. We have to recognize that what I am seeking is myself. It is merely recognizing myself or seeing myself that in fact what I am searching is I am myself. But Swamiji, if I am already that, then where is the question? Where is the question of knowing also? If already I am the happiness that I am searching for, then why am I unhappy? If the goal is my own self, then why do I find myself searching for it somewhere? That's called ignorance. Like this person is tenth man and is still searching for tenth man because doesn't know that he himself is tenth man. Similarly, we do not know that we are what we are searching for in our life. Why, Swamiji? It's called ignorance. Why? I don't know. This is a very frustrating situation. So why is it so, Swamiji? Why should it be so? There is no real satisfactory answer as to question why. In fact, there cannot be satisfactory answer to any questions in our life, really. Why? Why me? Why should this happen? I don't know. We'll give them some answers, no doubt, and mostly they satisfy also. But ultimately, because there is no genuine question, therefore there is no genuine answer. Understand that. There is no genuine problem, therefore there is no genuine answer. The problem was genuine, then the solution was genuine. There is no genuine problem. The problem is something that my mind creates. It creates this, it converts the situation to a problem. It has converted myself. I am the biggest problem for myself. I have the biggest problem with my own self because I said yesterday, there is one fellow whom I do not like and that is myself. There is one fellow with whom I am not comfortable with myself. Why is it so? When you are so beautiful, Swamiji, you are limitless. I don't know, ignorance. That's called self-judgments or conclusions or no sense about ourselves. That I am limited, I am such and such, I am no good. Why is it so? Ignorance. So all that is needed to do really is to become free from all these false notions and gain the true knowledge of myself. That's all that is necessary. All that was necessary to the tenth man is to become free from the notion that tenth man is lost. And secondly, to see that he is the tenth man. Therefore, knowing the tenth man, nothing remains to be known. Achieving the tenth man, nothing remains to be achieved, because he is what he was seeking. He is what he was seeking to achieve. And similarly also, knowing ourselves in our true nature. Right now, the way we know ourselves, but know ourselves falsely. If we did not know ourselves, there would have been no problem, really. This consciousness is a big problem. Self-consciousness is a problem. Because we are self-conscious, that's the problem. Thank God there is a state called deep sleep state where there is no self-consciousness. There's a great relief. Otherwise, you would get mad, crazy. Because every time I am self-conscious, I am unhappy. I find myself not acceptable to myself because I think I'm a limited being. So ignorance creates all these kind of false notions about myself, and there were false notions about the world, and all that is necessary is to become free from false notions, nothing else. So Vedanta says, going where they do not return, meaning that knowing which nothing more remains to be known. Discovering that I am what I was searching for. Tat padam, that end, that goal, that truth, that satyam, that reality has to be searched for. Where do you have to search for it? As my own self. Not looking out there, where is reality? That's what science is doing. Science is searching for reality out there, in the matter, and probing. And now we have found it. We have found the God particle, we have found. Okay, we are pretty close. We bless them. But as long as we are searching for the truth in a thing other than ourselves, we can never find it because it is not there. The one who is searching for the truth is himself the truth. So a scientist will discover the truth when he looks at himself rather than looking out there. But that they cannot do because then there is no more science. Because the tools are different. Tools for searching for the truth in matter are one, and searching for yourself are different tools are there. This tool is called yoga. It's called, looking at myself, understanding myself, the tool of self-knowledge. So once this understanding or insight takes place in me, that what I am searching for is the limitless, and the universe is all limited, and therefore it cannot provide me what I want, so I don't want that. So asanga, that's called the weapon of detachment. So once I have clearly understood that everything in the universe is limited, and therefore cannot give me what I am seeking, and therefore nothing to do with that, then it goes out of my mind. Then my mind becomes free from that. And now I can totally focus upon studying, listening to Vedanta. And already says, answer is given. Attaining which nothing remains to be attained. Meaning you are what you are searching for. That's all that a Vedanta teacher tells us. Tattvamasi, that thou art. You are what you are searching for. You are what you are trying to become. Our teacher, Pooja Swamiji, when we went to study with him many years ago, began like this. On the third or the fourth day, he says, that story was the same way was told, and tenth man story and stuff like that. With the conclusion that you are what you are searching for. That you are that. You are Brahman. You are limitless. So this is what I am telling you today. And at the end of the course, this is all I will tell you. Don't think I will tell you something else. Same thing. Every day in and day out, only one thing they keep on hammering in your mind. Because that's the only truth and that's all there is. There is nothing else. Then Swamiji, why do you go on for 2.5 years, 3 years, three and a half? Why do you such long courses? Even that is not enough. One lifetime is not enough. Why? It is because we have wrongly hammered ourselves that I am limited, I am no good. That hammering has been so strong, so deeply rooted that this new hammering takes a long time. That's all it is. It's a matter of gaining more and more clarity. There also our Swami used to give example of a Polaroid picture. Those days, 50 years ago, there was Polaroid cameras. Something new, you take the picture and pull out that frame and you don't see anything right away. Then you see some rough outline you see. Taken picture of the Swami sitting in the chair. You know, this is Swami. Then you can see, yeah, something, outline. So what's the knowledge? Swami is sitting in the chair. And slowly the picture develops. Oh, this is a face. Swami sitting in the chair. You can see features slowly and slowly. The knowledge is the same. What is the knowledge? Swami is sitting in the chair. That does not change. Except that it becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. At the end of the 2 minutes, you see it completely clearly. That's it. So first day also, you are limitless. So you got the knowledge. What we need is to fill up all those gaps and connect all the dots and then get all that clarity. And that is what takes time. Only because so many notions and complex are in our mind that all that cobweb has to be cleaned up. The cobweb in our mind in terms of our conclusions. Our complexes, our notions about ourselves, all that needs to be cleared up. So Vedanta addresses all our notions and shows us how they are notions and false, and thus we can drop them. So Vedanta helps us to slowly and slowly analyzing the complexes and become free from that. So the freedom is a process. Just as developing that picture is a process, it just doesn't develop like that. Not like today's digital stuff. The Polaroid takes, it's a process. And so also this is a process. There is no such thing as you blissed out in one moment. There's all the romantic ideas are there. The blissed out Swamiji. So everybody waits for something to happen. But it is, as I said, it is a process because it is like cleaning the cobwebs. As the cobwebs in the mind are cleaned, we can understand more and more clarity. That teaching becomes clearer and clearer. I discover the complexes one by one and they get dropped. That's how ignorance is shed. Knowledge becomes clearer and clearer until you become abiding in that knowledge, which we talked about yesterday. A person who is spontaneously abiding in that knowledge, that's for everybody. Each one of us is qualified to do that. And we have to do it today or tomorrow. There is no choice. Because you cannot be satisfied with the way being limited. You cannot be satisfied. You can't say, Swami, I'll postpone it. You can't postpone being happy. If by postponing your remaining, then Lord Krishna says, Anityam asukham lokam imam prapya bhajasvamam. Here, you know, you have limited time. And you have a lot of pain in the life also. Asukham. And you are struggling to find happiness out in the world where it is not. So give up all that stuff. Bhajasvamam. Worship me. Seek me. That Lord says is our own self. Here also it says, Tamevacha, second line says, Tamevachadyam purusham prapadye yatah pravrutte prasuta purane. When I'm listening to the teacher in Vedanta, what is my attitude? So here the second line describes what the bhakti or devotion, the attitude of surrender. This word surrender also doesn't go well with our mind. Surrender I cannot accept from you, or I can't surrender to anybody. Shraddha, the trust, I can't, you know, this trust and surrender, etc. is, we react to those things. We are always surrendered to something, I tell you. If nobody else, we surrender to our own ego anyway, we are surrendered. If I don't trust anyway, I trust my ego anyway. Somewhere I have to trust and somewhere I have to surrender. Without that, there cannot be life. So surrender where it should be surrender. Says, trust in the surrendering to the teacher, surrendering to the scripture, surrendering to this whole process, making myself available. What is meant by surrendering is not resisting. With an open mind, it's called surrender. Because usually my mind being what it is, I keep on questioning what is being told. If it does not go with my present notion, I question everything. That's what we are told, question everything. What do we question? When somebody says something which is different from what I presently believe, I question. Because I am surrendered to my own belief and therefore I don't accept other things. So understand, surrender we are. Then surrender to the source of knowledge, which is scriptures, coming through the teacher. It is not surrender in terms of being a slave or something like that. Surrender is not in terms of being vulnerable and being exploited. That's not my surrender. It means open mind. A learning mind. Not a questioning mind, but a learning. You don't question, but you ask a question is different from questioning somebody, understand? Asking question is one thing, that shows your desire to learn, and questioning is something else, that shows that you are resisting or not accepting what you are told. See the difference between the two? So kind of surrendering that we are talking about is a healthy surrendering, which gives me an openness of the mind, which gives me a learning mind. I surrender to the truth. The surrender to truth, you call it God or Ishvara, call it Brahman, call it Satyam, call it truth, it happens to be the self. What Vedanta, ultimate reality about God also happens to be nothing but your own true self. Not the self that we understand today. What the true nature of self is also happens to be the true nature of God, true nature of everything, meaning that the truth is to be discovered from myself, as myself. So surrendering means that I'm open to that. How can I be true? How can I be limitless? Just take it easy. You'll discover. Can you believe that? Who are we? Who am I? And who are you? That from which the whole universe has emerged, you are the very source of the whole universe, by which the whole universe is sustained, under which it goes back, the very cause of the creation is not outside of us, our own self is the very cause of the creation. The verse says, Yatah pravrtih prasuta purane. That from whom the instant creation has come forth, So we are talking the root of the tree of samsara. The tree is a creation, and what's the root? Urdhva Moolam, the root is most exalted, the root is limitless. What is that root? Vedanta teaches that the root is nothing but our own self. We are the root of the cause of the entire creation. Unbelievable, is it? I? Not you as you understand yourself, as you really are. It can happen that this actor, who is a very wealthy person also, while performing the role of a beggar, something can happen in his mind because of a little too much of stuff inside, and he may think that I am a real beggar. Suppose happens to him. He goes to the stage with a little too much inside, and then looks at himself in the mirror before coming to the stage, and yes, I am a beggar. Somehow the notion is, I am the beggar. And now wants to be wealthy, he wants to become wealthy. You don't want to become wealthy, you discover that you are wealthy. And similarly also, the truth or the limitless that I am searching for happens to be my own self. For a very simple reason. Everything other than myself is limited, as we see, wherever anything other than myself, which I can object, which I can know, is limited, because then only it can become the object of my knowledge. So limitless self is myself. Therefore the verse says that knowing which nothing remains to be known. Knowing here is the same as achieving. In this case, knowing and achieving is one. In case of entities other than myself, knowing is one and achieving is different. Knowing $1,000,000 is one thing and achieving it is a different matter. Knowing Hawaii is one thing and going there is a different matter. But in case of the self, knowing and achieving and becoming are one. Just as in case of the tenth man, knowing the tenth man is becoming the tenth man, is achieving the tenth man. Therefore, going where one does not return. There's no need, there's no question of returning. That's why he said everything. So therefore, I am surrendering means what? I am favorably disposed to discover this truth. That my mind does not resist, my mind accepts the fact that yes, it can be. That what I am searching for is to be discovered from myself. That we should become clear. So that when we are listening to teacher also, I don't try to construct a picture before myself. He's talking about Brahman or self. I don't try to construct a picture of ourself that self looks like this. No, there is different from myself. It is you that the teacher is talking about. Is our nature always to construct a picture? Brahman also when they talk, limitless when I try to imagine limitless. Something I always visualize in my mind. No, it's you. So when we are studying, one of the brahmacharis are written on his desk. We all have a desk with ourselves, folding thing, which we take to a room and bring to the class. On that he has written, Swamiji is talking about me, he has written there. To remind himself that what Swamiji is saying about the limitless, about freedom, is all about me. Meaning, I don't look for happiness and freedom out there, not somewhere else. This called surrender, meaning that being available, being disposed, being favorable to discovering this truth about mind. Don't reject yourself. Because I start with rejecting myself before I reject anything else, so don't reject yourself. You don't have to necessarily swallow or just accept what the teacher says. That is not what is surrender, what is meant. What is meant is understand what the teacher says. Don't reject it. If you do not understand, make an effort. If you think it's different from what you understand, well, try to understand that and don't reject because it is different. Because we do not go with a clean slate as far as ourselves is concerned. With a professor of physics, I go with a clean slate and therefore I have no emotional problem in understanding physics or chemistry. Here there is an emotional problem because I have so many complexes and opinions about myself. So just keep them out. Drop your complexes. Drop your opinions about yourself. It's a thing of dropping or letting go. That's what Vedanta teaches. Nothing to hold on to. You don't have to achieve yourself. You already are. But all you need to do is to let go your complexes. Born of ignorance. It's letting go. In Vedanta it's called neti neti. Not this, not this. Letting go. So letting go becomes an excellent sutra or aphorism in our life. Letting go. Let go. He did this, let go. Did not do this, let go. I did not get this, let go. You just let go. That is what the freedom is. Holding on is what creates a bondage. Letting go is what? So ultimate process of letting go is what? What you can let go is always limited. And it ultimately leads you to the limitless, which you cannot let go, which you don't have to let go, because that's yourself. One thing you cannot go let go is yourself. And whatever you let go is not worth it anyway, because it is limited. And so what you can let go is worth letting go, which leads you to something that you cannot let go, which doesn't need to be let go. Is this disposition of mind is called surrender, understand? Although we bow down to the teacher and we do all the, we wash his feet, that's a different thing. But the Vedantic teacher doesn't treat me as a slave or as somebody, you know, he doesn't treat me that way. He treats me with great respect. Just as the student has reverence for the teacher, a teacher also has respect for the student. This is a learning in the atmosphere of freedom, not in the atmosphere of bondage. Teacher gives me freedom, respects me. And in that environment of freedom, he communicates. So this is a process of learning and growing and ultimately discovering and owning up the true nature of ourselves, which happens with the root of the creation, which is the Urdhva Moolam, which is the most exalted thing. You can't imagine that the most exalted thing in creation is yourself. So much inferiority I have about myself that I can't accept it. I mean, I find it very difficult to accept it, or even believe it, or even consider it. No, I am willing to accept anybody as God, not me. I know myself very intimately, but that's not right. So thus being open to discover this fact about myself. Tameva chadyam purusham prapadye. There is adya purusha. That purusha means the limitless, is that from which is the source of the whole universe. And that is to be discovered as my own self. This word, these the scriptures teach us. That's what the teacher teaches us. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamivavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.